Welcome in to the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, as always, and I am very excited for a special edition of the Roundup. My co-host Jeff Cohen is not with us today, but I am super pumped to have my good friend Jack McMullen of Just Baseball and the Indianapolis Indians with us today. Jack does a ton of prospect coverage, all sorts of things. He happens to be a White Sox fan. He doesn't like to admit that, but he is a White Sox fan. So we're going to talk White Sox Top 100. The Just Baseball Top 100 just dropped today. You will be hearing this tomorrow, but it dropped today. And we're going to talk all about Sox prospects, what Jack is hoping to see in Indiana this year, and everything in between. So welcome in, Jack.
Thank you very much for having me, man. You told me to get excited for the intro, and you still undersold it to a certain extent. I love that intro with the organ music too. Is that Nancy Faust? Did you clip that from Nancy Faust?
I don't know if that is Nancy Faust. That's Ian, our guy who does all the tech stuff, but he made a nice intro. I will admit it's pretty catchy, right?
It's a fun intro. And then I like all the dropping logos too. It's like I'm playing Fruit Ninja with the affiliates.
Exactly. You're getting to know all the affiliate logos pretty extensively in the course of 10 seconds. So yeah, we're happy to have you on today, Jack. And we're gonna talk about a lot of things. But first of all, how are you doing? How are you getting ready for kind of, you know, we're a week, 4 days out from MLB opening day, AAA starting, you being a broadcaster in AAA, right? There's a ton going on right now. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm spending a lot of time on Twitter, more time than I should be spending on Twitter. But this is the time of year where you have to spend a bunch of time on Twitter because, like, I'm trying to read the tea leaves to know who I'm going to be around consistently for the next 6 months. And, you know, like, was that answer going to be Jared Jones, a right-hander in the Pirates organization? No, he made the opening day roster. Okay, looks like Alika Williams is going to make it. So who gets pinched out? Oh, Nick Gonzalez gets pinched out. Leover Piguero got pinched out. Like it's hard for me to kind of like do all the mental math and like account for absolutely everybody. And, you know, X person, Y person is starting in the IL. So I'm trying to keep tabs on that. And then for the Just Baseball stuff, I'm like, oh, Wyatt Langford made the team. I got to make sure I'm prepped on Wyatt Langford. Oh, wait, Jackson Chourio, I remember he got $80 million. So he's going to play. And like Jordan Leisure, a guy like that, I want to watch you pitch because I think you can close for a team this year in your rookie year. So it is a lot of guys that I am Twitter searching their names and hoping that something new comes up.
Yeah, I can't imagine that many. I think for me, right, I am locked in on the White Sox roster decisions who, you know, a day out still have not released their roster. So we're still like, we're in like the zone of like, where are we going with this roster? There's 40 players in camp still as of, you know, the last day of spring training today, which is crazy and kind of unheard of. And then beyond that, right, like with the JV stuff, you know, I'm doing the same thing as you, right? I'm trying to make sure I know what prospects are up and who's up and whatever and all these other things. So this time of the year is exciting. But it's a little crazy and it's a lot going on. So I definitely hear you. And I know you have a ton on your plate going into this season with the Indianapolis Indians. You know, you've been there, you're comfortable there, you know what's up. But it's a little bit of a different vibe, I think. The Pirates have a little more national attention, I would say, than the past few years, especially with the prospect side of things. And then, you know, today the Indians announced that Paul Skeens will be starting the year in AAA. So what is that like having kind of a lot of eyes on your team, I think, more than in the past few seasons?
So there are eyes on Skeens wherever he's gone. And I think that's like a unique thing to Paul Skeens, right? Like you have all these guys that you know are really good pitching prospects that make their way through the minor leagues. It's not like people are driving 6 hours to go see him. Like people were driving, 2 hours to go see Steven Strasburg when he was making his rapid ascension through the minor leagues. I'm thinking, you know, even to Garrett Cole, he was a selling point, but he wasn't the selling point. Paul Skeens has become the selling point. And is that because of what he does on the mound? Yes. Is it because of like, hey, social media presence and we're in the era of social media and his girlfriend just happens to be like a superstar on social media? It could be part of the equation. Absolutely. Yes. He is a selling point. And I don't think we've seen a selling point like him in minor league baseball since Bryce Harper. Like it's hard for me to find star power in a prospect like Paul Skeens.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you look at it, because I think you're completely right. Like there's a lot of factors that goes into that star power now. Like, yes, he's an incredible pitcher, but it's more than that, right? Like you have to think about it honestly. Well, and, you know,
so I've been to Omaha once in my life. I think it was 2017. I went to Omaha and LSU was in the field of eight. LSU like doubles any other fan base, maybe triples any other fan base. So like that's another wrinkle that you got to add to this. There are layers to the star power, one of which is LSU. Like, dude, there's so much baking into that cake.
It's pretty crazy. So obviously you're going to get to see him in Indianapolis. I don't know how long you're going to get to see him. It's kind of seems a little bit untold so far what the Pirates plan is. I know starting him there, but he's the type of guy where, like, if he got called up on any given Tuesday, you'd be like, oh, that seems sure. fair, right? Like, yeah. You know, it's tuned to be seen, but that's exciting. Aside from Skeens, is there anybody, I know you mentioned Jared Jones, I know you're a big fan of his. Yeah. Who are some of those key prospects in addition to Jones on the Pirates that you're really excited to watch this year and then just excited to also see at the major league level as opposed to in AAA?
Yeah, so we've had a bunch of guys kind of matriculate through Indianapolis over the last couple of years. So this is going to be year three for me. Year one was O'Neill Cruz. He was kind of the big name. And then last year, a lot of pitching. It was, Quinn Priester we saw get up there after pretty much spending the entire year with Indianapolis. And Priester doesn't look like he's making the opening day rotation, so he may be back in Indianapolis. But, you know, a guy like Luis Ortiz, I'm fascinated because he was really good in 22. Then he was really not good in 23. What does Luis Ortiz look like in 2024? Roansy Contreras, another guy that had a ton of prospect intrigue when I got here. And now it's like, well, he's out of options. Are we going to DFA him? He's in the bullpen. Like the progression of a lot of these guys is very unique. And then, you know, getting another look at Nick Gonzalez, I think that guy is too good to be a minor league baseball player, man. I think Leover Peguero is too good to be a minor league baseball player. Do they have space for Ji-Won Bae? He's too good to be a minor league baseball player. So it's a different feel now where we get some repeats. We're not getting guys on the way up because so many of those guys have already passed through, like a Henry Davis and Andy Rodriguez and O'Neill Cruz. List keeps going.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. There's a wealth of talent, and it's, I think, that gap between those guys that are, you know, I hate the phrase quad A. I've never been a fan of that because I think it's unfair to these players, right? Because they're talented players. It's just you have a roster crunch at the major league level, so you have to figure out where those guys go, and are they best served getting everyday at-bats at AAA, or are they best served being a utility role or a bench role in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a hard line to toe and just figure that out, but you've got a lot of players you're going to watch. They're going to be a lot of fun. Switching over to your favorite, least favorite team. I like to call you my favorite White Sox fan that doesn't like the White Sox. But shifting gears, you know, the Just Baseball Top 100 came out today, and I kind of knew this was coming from talking with you and with Arm Layton, who is the main creator of this crazy, awesome Top 100. Yeah. Five White Sox. I don't think there's been five White Sox in the Top 100 since Just Baseball's existed. I definitely am confident about that. And I don't think there's been five White Sox on any Top 100 since the Luis Robert Eloy Jimenez prospect era, right? So it's been a while. What does that just say? I mean, the main focal point of this podcast the last 2 months has been the depth of the system and how it's changed so drastically, but especially since the Cease trade a few weeks ago for Drew Thorpe and Jairo Yarte and Samuel Zavala, what does the Top 100 kind of say about where the White Sox system is at right now?
I think they've made the most of their movable pieces, and you could argue that Luis Robert is still movable, but I mean, that would be a Mount Everest needed back to move Luis Robert. They got a top 100 prospect for Lucas Giolito, and they got another guy that was like a top five prospect in the Angels system in Kai Bush. And we'll see what he looks like. He's not a top 100 prospect in baseball, but you know, he could be a big league starter down the line. So if you get a major league starting pitcher and a top 100 prospect as a catcher in return for a quarter of a season of Lucas Giolito, cause he got, you know, put on waivers, like that was a bizarre situation in LA, but I mean, that was a heist, and you got to credit Rick Hahn for what he did at the deadline. Even guys that aren't on the top 100, adding Nick Nastrini and Jordan Leisure to the system for a guy that had a 5.5 ERA. Come on now. And a guy that was owed $9 million and Joe Kelly. Like, it's amazing what Rick Hahn was able to do in his last, you know, couple weeks as general manager of the Chicago White Sox. And then thought Chris Getz did really well in that Cease deal too. Drew Thorpe, I mean, Arum has said best changeup in all of minor league baseball. And then Jairo Iriarte is a guy that, you know, fastball slider combo could get him into a bullpen like right now. So they have made the most of the trades. And last time this happened, you got to think about who the five on the top 100 were. We're talking about Kopech and Moncada, who came back for an all-star pitcher. Cease and Jimenez, who came back for a fringe all-star pitcher. And then who was the other at that point? Luis Robert.
Yeah,
so big money IFA guy. Like, and Colson Montgomery, first round guy. Brian Ramos, IFA guy. So, you know, like you run into this nice combination of homegrown, but also maximizing the return for your assets. And they have done that really well.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more with you on all of that. I think Rick Hahn, you know, had his faults, But to his credit, the dude has gotten value in trades. Like,
he did really well. And you got to remember, he was the first mover in the pre-arbitration extensions. Yep. Like, it wasn't Alex Anthopoulos in Atlanta. It was Rick Hahn with Tim Anderson, with Yoan Moncada, with Robert.
And some of those aren't working out, right? The Moncada deal looks really bad right now, and the Jimenez deal looks okay if he's healthy, maybe. But like at the same time, he also got Luis Robert on a deal that looks like a complete steal right now at $15 million a year for one of the best center fielders in baseball, right?
And dude, how about Tim Anderson too? I mean, Anderson was worth every penny when you kind of backdate it and factor in the money, and like they had a club option. So when TA wasn't performing, they nipped it in the bud. They got out because they had flexibility to get out.
No, you're completely right. And I totally agree. I think I get moving on from Rickon, and I think it was the right decision, but a lot of what he did has set up the franchise in not a terrible spot to bounce back fairly quickly from what was the worst season in many, many years last year. Right. And there's a world where this team is pretty solid in 2 years from now and 2-3 years from now, especially as opposed to being, in another 5-7 year rebuild. Right.
And you make a very important point that they may be good in like 2 years as opposed to 5-7.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, it's because of what happened in the last 365 days.
Yep. 100%.
Last year, we were saying if they're not good, they're screwed for a long time. Not the case anymore.
Exactly. And I remember last year when you're the top 100, the first top 100 of 2023, Arm was like, yep, you've got Colson, you've got Noah. Sorry, dude, I can't help you after that. And that was fair, right? That was justified. I think he was high on Brian Ramos before most people were, to be honest. But generally speaking, it was you got two first round guys who you're in your system who have a ton of upside. And beyond that, it was lacking. The rest of the system did not look strong. It was thin at a bunch of different positions. And now you look at a system where it's not just, 5-100 guys. There's some depth there, right? Like a guy like Jake Eater, who I think is going to have a bounce back year. Yes, last year was rough. The organization brought him into the deadline. It didn't go well. Still a guy that was one of the best minor league pitchers in baseball 2-3 years ago, right? So there's a lot of depth up and down the system. I want to talk specifically the top 100 for now. I'm going to read kind of the top 100 for JB right now, just for our listeners. And then I kind of want to get just your brief take on those five and then a few beyond that. So
perfect.
Coming into this list at the beginning was 16 was Colson Montgomery. That's about where he's been on most lists. I think he's been in that 10 to 15 range most places I've seen him, and deservedly so. 58 was Drew Thorpe. Interesting to see Thorpe above Schultz, actually. I know I expected that from Arum, but I don't think most people would expect that. And then 65 is Schultz. 67 is Edgar Caro, about where he was last time. And then 81 is Jairo Iriarte, who was also acquired in the Cease deal. So two of those guys from the Cease deal. Just a really solid group of five players. What are your key kind of points on those five and things that could kind of drive them further up this list going forward this year?
100%. So we'll start with Colson. Colson is a big guy that seems to be getting bigger and bigger like every month. And that may throw up some red flags when it comes to being a, serviceable defender at shortstop. But you see big shortstops survive at the major league level. And you got to start thinking about Colson Montgomery a lot like you do a Carlos Correa or a Corey Seager, where they are not the smoothest, silkiest defenders in Major League Baseball, but they are. Correa was a platinum glover because he's got an arm that like nobody else has on planet Earth. And then you've got Seager, who like makes the most out of what he is as a shortstop, and the bat carries him. I think Seager is the better example of big shortstop that Colson can become. You hope that he is an average defender at shortstop as a big guy, and he has 30 homer potential as a left-handed hitting shortstop. That's exactly what Colson Montgomery can be. And the fact that we're talking about a poor man Seager as like the 80th percentile comp is amazing. And that's why he's a top 20 prospect in the game. I like the stack of Thorpe and Noah Schultz because Noah Schultz has so much tread left on his tires, but like, you also got to factor in this guy really hasn't pitched in pro ball.
Yeah.
And we've got 120 inning sample in 2023 of Drew Thorpe being like the best pitcher in the minor leagues. It was him and Robbie Snelling that were the two best pitchers in minor league baseball. So my thing when we talk about like the top 100 and when we talk about pitching prospects in general, obviously pitch by pitch in a vacuum, the stuff matters. The production needs to matter too. What's on the stat sheet needs to matter.
Yep.
And 120 innings at a low 2 ZRA in high A and double A for Drew Thorpe needs to matter.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's true. You have to – it's that balance, right? I think what you guys go through the top 100 is the balance between – you know, productivity and upside, right? Because Schultz, like, you can look at Schultz and see best pitcher in the minor leagues level,
sure,
like talent for sure. The arm talent's there. I saw him pitch in Arizona a few weeks ago on the backfields, and you sit there and you watch the guy and you're like, wow. But we need to see it. Like, we need to see it to take that next step.
And the thing is, like, this game, it's not a 40 game season. Like, we're not going to get, you know, 50 innings of Noah Schultz's best. We need 200, or like, not 200. 200 is like reserved for five guys in Major League Baseball now. But at Noah Schultz's peak, like, the way we call him a star pitcher in Major League Baseball, or like best pitcher in baseball, is this guy's logging 170 innings. How many professional innings from Noah Schultz do we have under our belt? Is it 10, 15?
It's like 27, I think, I want to say. It's in the 20s.
It was 27 last year.
27.
It was 27 last year. There we go. So, like, there you go, man. Like, Drew Thorpe just 5X'd that.
Yeah. No, 100%. That's completely understandable. I think that's the right way. What do you think about Thorpe's? This is one thing I was noticing, just kind of Twitter rumblings and just talking to people. What do you think about Thorpe's fastball being any sort of limitation on him as a starter? Because I know the changeup is excellent. Both the kind of sweeper slider, both have looked, from what I've seen, look really good and look like kind of a mixture of a strikeout pitch, but also versatile. The fastball is where I think some people have been like, that's a little concerning from a guy that you want to be a starter full time soon, right?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I try to think about it in terms of, okay, what pitches can develop? Can you add a new pitch to your arsenal? The way that I see a fastball is like, okay, you have what you have. If you're a freak athlete, I think that you can figure out a way to maximize your fastball. We were just having this conversation on the call up actually about Hurston Waldrop in the Braves system. It's like, he's such a freak athlete that his fastball concerns, A, can be masked because he throws at 97, and B, because he's such a freak athlete, he can figure it out. Thorpe is like low to mid 90s instead of 97, 98, and he's not as freaky of an athlete as Waldrop is. So I would say the concern is just a little bit heightened. But when you have that good of secondaries, if you can figure out a way to pinpoint command your fastball, I mean, shape aside, I think you can kind of throw it to the wayside. And it will limit him in some capacity when it comes to becoming a frontline guy.
Yeah.
But a mid-rotation guy can have poor characteristics when it comes to fastball shape and still survive and borderline thrive across 150 innings.
Yeah, completely. I totally agree on that note. Edgar Caro is someone that I've gotten to know a little bit over the last year. First of all, just like incredible work ethic. The guy is like one of the prospects that I talk to. And every time I talk to him, he's like, yep, I got to get better at this. I got to get better at this. And it's just like that constant wanting to be better. The switch hitting just catcher aspect from such a young age, you know, the guy's 20 heading into this season. I think people in White Sox fans altogether probably forget that a little bit. Like, he was acquired at last year when he was like a kid playing in Double A already.
Yeah.
And that's something that is a pretty unique profile. What do you think kind of is the next step for him? Obviously the defense is his focal point. Like, what's the next step for him to be like, you know, this guy's the catcher of the White Sox, like, soon.
Aside from production, like, continue to learn. He was so young at such a high level. Yeah. And I think that may unfairly put him on a pedestal for the White Sox fan base, right? Like, hey, he's 21 years old. He's in AAA. Why is he not ready at the All-Star break? Like, you may watch Martin Maldonado and Max Stassi stink for 3 months and be like, it's time for Caro. You sure? He's 21 years old in AAA. My thing is, you have to be okay with letting maturation happen. And I don't know if the White Sox will let it happen or not. I hope they do. I hope Edgar Caro, for his sake, spends the entire year in Charlotte. Really hope so.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's hard for me to pinpoint, oh, he needs to impact the ball a bit more. He needs to become more patient.
Right.
And like, yes, and yes, he needs to elevate pretty much like every part of his game in order to be a big league player. But he's also super duper young. So you just have to be okay with him taking a bit more time than maybe a fan base that is frustrated and watching a rebuilding team wants to give him.
Yeah, and that's why I actually think it's really nice that Corey Lee is in the fold, because I don't think Corey Lee is, you know, an MLB starter. I'm not sure I see his profile going that direction. But no. Corey Lee is someone who can offer at least some intrigue at the catcher position. I mean, Stassi already is opening on the IL. I don't know if you saw that earlier today, but Corey Lee is starting as the backup catcher to begin the season with Stassi on the IL. But even with Stassi back, right, like if either of those two veteran catchers are really struggling, at least you have a guy in AAA who's older and more advanced that you can then put in and say, here's another catcher to play, so that Caro can really just focus on 2025. Because I agree, I don't think this year is worth it for him. And I think that when you look at the status of the rest of the organization, really planning for 2025 to be the time where Caro can, you know, become a big leaguer makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, Corey Lee is kind of what I consider a time buyer. I think that he's a really good time buyer. It's like Gardner Minshew quarterbacking the Colts this past year. Really good,
that's a good
time
analogy.
Buyer.
I like that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's not like Corey Lee is going to go sign a 2-year, $20 million deal anywhere. True. But I like, and it's not like he's going to make a Pro Bowl or like an All-Star team. Like, I know Minshew was a Pro Bowler, but what I'm saying is like, okay, you had that guy that can elevate if need be. And you know, he's a Band-Aid on a big wound, but a Band-Aid. And you can wait for like the Neosporin to come, because the Neosporin's not ready yet.
Man, you were just breaking out the analogies. I love it. That's great. But I'm excited. I think that's the complete right mindset with Caro. And then Iriarte, you know, a guy that I think the JB Top 100 has him higher, I think, than I don't think anywhere else really has him top 100 right now. And you had him, I mean, Arm had him there last year as well. So this is a guy that has been kind of talked about for a while among you and Arm especially. And in general, is just someone that there is reliever risk. I get it. Like, that's something when I was talking last week when the trade came, I mean, I was saying there's a risk that he's a reliever, right? But at the same time, three pitches that have all shown to be pretty good, and you know, a command that's shaky but misses a lot of bats and can churn some innings last year, right? Like, this is a guy who, if things click and the command kind of falls in place a little more, is this like a somewhat Dylan Cease light type of profile in a way?
It's tough because Cease had four pitches that he could go to, and you know, Cease had that crazy bender, and Iriarte doesn't have that. Cease's slider was obviously the thing. When you look at fastball slider, it can be a Dylan Cease light thing, but Cease had the curveball, and then he had a changeup with crazy separation. I think the most underrated pitch in Cease's bag was that changeup. Like, because that was coming in the high 70s, 20-mile-an-hour separation. Yeah. Iriarte, I am in on because he is pretty much the it guy in Major League Baseball right now, where it's harder and harder fastball slider, and you can get swings and misses from both sides of the plate with that slider. I think that is the calling card for a guy like that. And baseball's cyclical. They may go back to the pitchability guy with a four-pitch mix. I have no idea. But as of right now, he fits the trend more than any other pitcher in the White Sox system.
See, I like that. That's interesting too, because what's fascinating about that is Getz has been targeting Bannister, especially Brian Bannister, who took over the pitching development, has been targeting kind of the opposite. He's kind of been going with more of the Thorpe-esque guys that are pitchability and movement, and Iriarte's not that.
Tell you what, getting both those guys in the same deal was awesome, because they are totally yin and yang when you look at pitching prospects, but guess what? They're both good pitching prospects.
Yep, I completely agree. It's fun to have that contrast, right? Because either direction, they're different, but they both work in their own ways. So that's what's going to be exciting about watching those two develop together, and also just knowing they came from the same trade. I'm excited to see the direction those take. And then kind of the last guy that I know is not on the top 100, but was on the top 100 last year. And I don't think it was even, oh, he was bad last year. I just think in general, there was a lot of players that were impressive. So Brian Ramos naturally, like, I think just other people passed him. I don't think it was like he was bad. I just think he was hurt part of the year, and he didn't necessarily elevate his game a lot compared to the year before. Yeah. So where is Ramos at right now, kind of dropping down the list a little bit and then looking forward into this year for him?
He's a part of the White Sox future, surely, but he needs to do something exceptionally well. And I think he was hampered by health. He had 22 homers in 2022. He comes back, he plays 81 games. He gets 15, like, you're not going to get really excited about 15 homers or four stolen bases or a 260 clip. Like, something needs to be exceptional, I guess, to land you on the top 100, or you have to do everything really well. And he did everything well, but he didn't do everything really well. Like, Tommy Troy for the Diamondbacks is a great example. Arizona's first round pick from last year. He does everything really well. And Ramos, it's like, yeah, he's good. He's good. He's good. When you look across the board at tools, but nothing was great, and he didn't have four or five really goods.
Yeah, I completely. That's totally accurate. I think one of the things that I do like about him kind of from last year and looking into this year is the defense looks good. I think that's one thing that, you know, when he was coming up 2 years ago and he kind of had his first breakout year in 22, it was like, is he sticking at third? Is he going to try out second base? Is he kind of going to clean enough? The arm strength is there, but he looked a lot cleaner to me. I got to see him in person a lot last year, and like he looked just more comfortable at third base. The footwork is clean. The arm is good. He gets a little wary with his throws at times, but generally a guy that looks like he's a quality big league third baseman defensively.
I love it, especially if Colson can stick at short, right. And you know, he's got tons of time to figure out if he can stick at short. So that it has to be fun to have like your future shortstop and your future third baseman, like kind of in lockstep through the minor leagues, right? They're both, you know, double A, then they're going to go to triple A. They could debut on the same damn day, man.
Yeah. No, that is super cool. I know Colson obviously has more hype and is probably more upside, right? Like you said, Ramos still kind of needs to take a few steps in certain spots, but they're both big league pieces and they both could play next to each other for a decade if things go well, right?
Yeah. And it's okay to be Robin. Robin still gets paid. Yeah.
That's true. It's a very good point. Let's talk two guys who I think are going to be hopefully on the opening day roster. It seems like they both have a shot. I don't, at this point, I'm kind of confused. I think reports today said that Jordan Leisure is making the roster as a relief pitcher. Nick Nestrini, I interviewed both these guys last week and they're
both, I loved like, those clips. Super, yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun. They're both awesome guys and they both like are friends, which makes it engaging to talk to guys when they, you know, they get along with each other and they have fun with each other. But you know, Nestrini, I think has the upper hand on the five spot in the rotation. I don't see why he wouldn't. What do you think just those two, like what is their impact this year? And then what is kind of their, hopefully their long-term outlook?
Well, Nestrini is going to fill a spot that so badly needs to be filled. And Leisure is going to fill a spot that so badly needs to be filled. this rotation gets very shallow very quickly. And I think that's best highlighted by the opening day starter making his first start since he was in college. And then the bullpen, man, like I've said it, I've just kind of been pounding the pavement here. I think Jordan Leisure's first career appearance should come in a save situation. I think as of right now, pound for pound, he's the best reliever that the White Sox have in the organization. And he has yet to make his major league debut. And I understand, like, hey, go with Brebbia, go with Tim Hill, whatever you want to do. Leisure, like, I think he's flicked the glove forward, like, fastball's coming, try and do something with it.
Yeah.
He's as much of that guy as we've got in the minor leagues when it comes to just sheer relievers. And there are some relievers that, you know, I really fall in love with on a given year. Last year was Orion Kerkering with the Phillies and Anthony Maldonado with the Marlins. Leisure was my late add. He was my three favorite bullpen guys in minor league baseball. And if you like a bullpen guy in minor league baseball, chances are he can be damn good at the major league level. I think Leisure is that. And then Nestrini, you're telling me that he's not one of the top five big league ready starters that the White Sox have right now? It seems clear as day that he should be run out there in the first five games.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a case that he's probably maybe one, two. Like, I mean, there's a valid case to be made.
Crochet looked good. Crochet looked good in the spring. Yeah.
He looks good, and so did Soroka, actually. Soroka's looked great all spring, which is another exciting note. I think that's totally true about Leisure. I wouldn't be surprised if the Sox mess around with Kopech closing games now that he's throwing 101 again out of the bullpen, which I've been preaching for him to be in the bullpen for like 2 years now. So I think we're on the same boat there. I think it makes the most sense for him right now. But, you know, Kopech Leisure in the late innings is kind of fun. It's a little more exciting than what I think most people 6 months ago would have seen coming from the Sox bullpen. And there's some intrigue there. And I think, you know, Brebbia, Tim Hill, Steven Wilson, those are guys that'll fill roles and they can be flipped to the deadline if they're pitching well. And beyond that, it's like, it's a little better than other options. Right.
Yeah. It's crazy how quickly I changed my tune on Kopech where I'm like, oh, he can't be in the starting rotation. I'm like, oh yeah, I love him in the bullpen.
Leverage. Yeah, let's get him locking down innings here. Also, one inning here and there.
Did you see Pedro Grifol's statement on leverage, on using Leisure in the ninth inning? I didn't understand it. I was hoping maybe you could shed some light on it for me, but I'm sure you didn't understand it.
Not sure I understand the majority of things that has been said in spring, but I think generally the message is that you use your best guys when you need them, not in the ninth inning, which I am okay with.
I'm fine with that. I don't really think it made sense, but
I'm okay with that. I think that's the right idea. I think generally, like in modern baseball, unless you have a Josh Hader or an Edwin Diaz, like a lot of teams are using closer by committee and use your best pitcher in the best in the key situation, and that it makes sense in many cases. So I'm okay with that. I like that. I think it makes sense. But at the same time, like, do I want Jordan Leisure closing games more than I want anybody else closing games? Yeah. But that's okay. So let's do real quick. We'll do any other prospects you want to like mention beyond that top 10 kind of that we've talked about that you just personally stick out to you in the White Sox system.
Yeah. Tim Elkohive, stand up. I know he's got a huge following on Twitter.
Huge.
He's really good. All he's done is hit everywhere he's been. So you got to respect that. I really like Peyton Paulette. Every look I've gotten at Paulette, I'm like, that fastball jumps. And I love that thing. Smaller guy, obviously. And I know you're high on Wolko. I haven't seen enough to call him that guy.
Yeah.
Another one that I think could be an eighth inning guy is Prelander Baroa. I really like that get in the Gregory Santos deal. So I'd say those guys off the top are the ones that I'm really into. And then Riku Nishida, I'm just into for the vibes. Like I'm excited to watch, the clips that go, the clips that go viral and all that. But I would say Paulette is a guy that I'm like, don't forget about him. He's been somewhat unavailable in his pro career. I'm excited to see what that fastball can do if he gets to throw 80 innings or whatever.
Yeah, I put Paulette on my top 10, actually, of the White Sox system when I just ranked. I did my personal, and Paulette was my 10th prospect. And I think even after the trade, he was my number 10, because I do think the general upside with him is a lot higher than a lot of other pitchers, right? This is a guy who had Tommy John, right? He went through a lot of stuff to get back to where he is. And last year, it was about getting him innings and getting him healthy. He did that, right? He was healthy all season. He made all of his starts. They weren't, super long starts, right? But it's a guy who showed that he's fully back. And now it's like, oh, let's see the stuff tick up a little bit. I think this year you're really going to see some of his spin rates and just his movement, in addition to maybe even the velocity, really start to take another step this year now that he's fully back in his a year removed from surgery self. So that's an exciting guy. And then Baroa too is like you said, that in that trade, right? Like his best outcome is probably Gregory Santos, right? Maybe even better, honestly. So, right, like if you're trading a reliever and you're getting one of the pieces that could be similar to that same reliever, in addition to Zach Deloach, who I think could be a solid bench outfielder, fourth outfield guy, and another pick, that picks are valuable, right? I'll take a second round comp pick, right? So that I totally agree with. And Baroa, another guy that could factor into the bullpen. So now that we think about the major league team, right, we'll wrap on this here. Give me like a few basic, and I know you don't want to do this because I know you get driven crazy by the White Sox, but give me like a few things that you are excited to watch from the major league team. I know that's hard. There's a lot of things that are not exciting to watch, but what are some things that you think are just going to be interesting to follow this season, whether it's good or bad?
Yeah. Garrett Crochet, the starting pitcher.
Yeah.
Any chance I get to watch Luis Robert, I'm going to make the most of it.
Yep.
I really enjoy a good Yoan Moncada. I hope that Moncada is good. And it's going to be fun to see Mike Soroka back in a big league rotation consistently. So I'd say those are the ones. Aside from that, like, I'm very excited to watch Leisure in a tight game. For sure. Like, very excited for that. I'd say those are probably the things. Like, I'm banking on an Andrew Vaughn ascension. I don't know if that's coming. I would say, like, if I'm tuning into a White Sox game, it's for a Crochet or Soroka start.
Yep.
And it's to watch Luis Robert and Yoan Moncada play.
Yeah, I like that. And I think Moncada will be fun to watch too, because both him and Jimenez having club options, this is kind of it for them, I think, to make a whatever that means. I don't think Moncada is part of the long-term plan regardless of what he does this year.
He's at such a steep price point too. Like, they're just going to cut bait.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate that you have a $5 million buyout, though, because I think if it wasn't for that, you try to trade him. But I'm not sure any team trades for him knowing they have to pay him $5 million just to not stay on the team for $25 million the year after. So that's a little tricky. But in general, this year is about growth, right? I think you know that. I know that. I think all White Sox fans know that, right? Like, this year is about seeing the guys you mentioned, in addition to, Colson, Brian, all these other prospects that will be up.
Yeah.
Who is part of the future and who can show that they're part of the future this season, whether it be the current guys or the prospects. And then from there, right, you look into 2025, 2026, and there's a lot of intrigue there compared to where there is right now. So yes. I know I'm a little bit excited just to see the development, even if it's not going to be pretty much of this season. And I know, I hope you are too, even though I'm not sure you are.
I'm excited. I am. Like, I don't know. Like, let's talk in 2025. No, okay, let's talk fair. In 2025. No, 24 is going to be a really hard one for me to stop.
Yeah, for sure. You're completely right. I totally agree with you, but I think there's signs of good things on the way, hopefully. So I really appreciate you hopping on, Jack, and we will have you back on in 2025 when things are going very well for the White Sox, knock on wood.
Perfect. Yeah, like, don't invite me on when stuff's hitting the fan, okay? Like, bring me on when things are good, and I'll be more excited to talk White Sox baseball. That works.
Maybe Colson's debut. We'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, bingo.
Appreciate you, Jack.
Appreciate you, man.
We'll see you next time on the Roundup. Thanks.